Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Disney's losses in 2020 weren't as bad as expected, Disneyland not opening in 2020, updates coming to the parks,
a first look at the Spider-Man vehicles, the holidays come to the resort, we talk with former cast member Jesse, and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 18th, 2020. I'm Tig Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Jill M. for increasing your support of the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Without the community of support, we would not be able to have as much Disney magic in our lives and get to share that with all of you. The supporter Discord chat has been, like I said, a wonderful source of Disney magic from our supporters. We have things like theme topic days. We have a weekly tier, like Zoom meeting, Thanksgiving thing.
Oh, yeah. That's
all sorts
be fun.
Of fun things planned. If you'd like to become a weekly tier yourself and have some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
We wanted to just send a quick reminder to all of our listeners that our friends over at All Enchanting Ears are still having flash sales. They've had they have some coming up for the last two weekends of November, with the last one being through Monday for Cyber Monday. So there's big sales on all kinds of gifts for the family. Also, in addition to the flash sales, if you use the DL Weekly 10 promo code, you can get 10% off for weekly tiers. So head on over to allenchantingears.com and look at some of the merch. I know that I'm probably going to be heading over there again because there's a couple more masks I'd like to get. What a great deal.
Well, it's that time again, and we are hosting our public live stream this coming Sunday. So this Sunday, November 22nd, tune in at 7:30 p.m. Central or 5:30 p.m. Pacific and hang out with Tag and I as we talk about who knows what, but definitely Disney related. But the live streams are a lot of fun. It's a great way for us to connect with you guys, the listeners, and also a great way for you guys to ask us any questions that maybe you have on your mind. So again, this will be hosted on YouTube. Check out all of our different social media accounts. We will have the links posted there for you to come join us this Sunday.
Now let's get to the news. Last Thursday, Disney held their quarter four earnings report and fiscal 2020 year end results. The company had $14 billion in revenue, beating expectations. The Disney parks had the worst loss in the company with a 61% decrease in revenue, resulting in a $1.1 billion loss. Disney estimates the total impact from COVID-19 in 2020 was $7.4 billion overall. That's through theme parks and the whole company.
It's just, you know, it's, we know the Disney company is hurting because of everything going on in the world right now, but it's just, it's so different to like see what the actual numbers of the impact is. So, I mean, no surprise that, of course, the Disney parks portion is having the worst loss in the company since we don't have all parks functioning, nor have all parks been able to be open, because we did have parks like Disneyland Paris that opened and then had to close again.
And Hong Kong.
And yeah. Hong Kong, yeah. So it's just, we're very lucky that Walt Disney World has opened and been able to remain open, however that may be the case. And of course, as we all know, Disneyland is yet to be open. So no surprise there that that is the biggest decrease in revenue.
Yeah. So some of the other interesting things that came from this that I just want to quickly hit on. Disney Plus has 73.7 million subscribers.
That's amazing.
Which is amazing. They had all of their productions. So all of their movies and TV shows and everything that they're doing company-wide are all back into production. Bob Chapek was quoted as saying that they were disappointed in the state of California for keeping Disneyland closed. The parks that were open, Disney World, Shanghai, and Hong Kong, had net positive contribution. That means that they're making money. Thanksgiving at Walt Disney World is almost completely booked. Otherwise, they've been running at about a 71% booking rate. People have been spending less on parks, but more on the media and corporate segments. So lots of cool information there. So they also feel great about how they've been handling the COVID response in the parks and have actually increased their capacity limits in Walt Disney World from 25% to 35%. So pretty cool.
During the 2020 earnings call last week, Disney CEO Bob Chapek dropped the news that they did not think Disneyland would be open in the fiscal first quarter of 2021. This is confusing, as some different online publications are saying this means not until March of 2021, but the way that Disney has its fiscal years set up means that Disney will not be open for the rest of 2020. The second fiscal quarter starts in January 2021.
Yeah, so this is weird because their fiscal quarters don't line up with actual quarter,
that like is confusing.
Calendar quarters, because some publications, in fact, I think when you added this story in here too, because where you got the news from, said not till March. Well, I mean, I don't actually expect it to be until March, yeah, because of stuff we're going to talk about next. At least, you know, I guess at least we know, right? It's kind of like they kept pushing the reservations back for hotels and finally they just stopped taking reservations. I think they're just at this point where we'll open when we open. Well, most of California, including Orange County, where Disneyland, Disney California Adventure, and Knott's Berry Farm are located, have slid back into the purple zone on California's COVID-19 blueprint. This means that even the smaller amusement parks need to close down again, and indoor dining will not be allowed, with fewer guests allowed inside retail locations. For downtown Disney, this means a return to outdoor dining only and longer lines for the retail stores.
Yeah, So downtown Disney really, I don't think, is going to see too much of an impact for this. There's going to be fewer people let inside of the stores. For the most part, downtown Disney dining has been specifically outdoor. However, the good news, silver lining in this, is that Buena Vista Street is going to be opening this week. And with that, they were going to be able to add some capacity. So I don't feel like Disney's going to feel the hit of this quite as much. And actually, they may be able to welcome more people than they had been, because they have more space, more shops, more dining options with Buena Vista Street opening up. So they couldn't have asked for better timing, as far as all, you know, it's good timing that these happen at the same time. Josh D'Amaro, chairman of Disney Parks Experiences and Products, presented the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, or IAPA, Virtual Education Conference. During the presentation, he showed off some positive changes coming to the parks around the world. At Disneyland, Avengers Campus is working toward completion, with the bulk of the additions happening at our other parks.
Yeah, so this was like kind of a big surprise. I honestly didn't even know the IAPA conference was even going on. Apparently, this is something that happens every year. And so they were able to kind of showcase some of the things that are coming to Disney parks. A lot of these things, there's nothing surprising here.
So they did show off stuff that we're going to talk about in the next story, but not Disneyland specific. We will have the link to this, of course, in our show notes. But the thing that was so interesting is that they had all these really cool videos that showcase this technology. Mm-hmm. Now, some of it was technology we had seen before, like the new Spider-Man animatronic that's going to be slinging webs and flipping flips over Avenger Campus. But we also got to see the ride system for Cosmic Rewind, which
looks super cool.
It's very cool, which is going to be the new attraction in Epcot, theme to Guardians of the Galaxy. The technology on this looked really cool.
So they call it an Omni Coaster.
Yeah, it's super
and
cool.
It's the Omni Mover system, basically, on a roller coaster.
Yeah, it is super cool and interesting. Mm-hmm. You got to watch the video. I don't even really know how to describe it, but you got to watch the video. It looks fun.
Very cool. Now, other cool news that came out of this was, I'll give you the boring news, comparatively news here, is Greg Hale, the creator of FastPass, was added to the IAPA Hall of Fame, and
Tony Baxter was also added to the Hall of Fame. Two very well-deserving people. You know how much we admire Tony Baxter.
Oh, yes.
And, I mean, Greg Hale, if you know, FastPass seems like a very basic, very simple thing, but it's so advanced, and it's like so much technology, and so there's so much more to it than what we realize, right? Because it's so easy and simple for us to use that we don't really think much of it. But I mean, that system, changed the way we do Disney theme parks. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as much in Disneyland, but for sure, Walt Disney World, it's kind of its own, like, it's almost like you have to speak a whole new different language to figure out how to use the system correctly there. So, interesting. Something that really, right, you don't think about too much, but has had a huge impact on our theme parks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This week, we received a first look at the actual ride vehicle for the new Spider-Man attraction coming to Avengers Campus. The new attraction named Web Slingers, a Spider-Man adventure. I'm sorry, I'm just not a fan of their naming of attractions.
How do you think we're going to make this? So, right, Indiana Jones, Temple of the Forbidden Eye has been shortened to
Indy. People are probably just going to call it Web Slingers or Spider-Man, the Spider-Man attraction.
I'm sure it'll be the Spider-Man attraction, but there's not even a nice way to shorten this. Like, Rise of the Resistance is now just Rise.
They'll probably just say Spider-Man. That's what I think. So the new attraction named Web Slingers, a Spider-Man Adventure will be... I just want to do it like Web Slingers, a Spider-Man Adventure.
Justin would be so proud.
Yes. Will be the new e-ticket in the land when it opens. The ride vehicles are enclosed and give the feel of a much smaller Guardians gantry lift. The side of the vehicle opens to allow guests to board in a single line facing outward so they can sling webs.
I don't know. I'm even more fascinated by this because this has just been interesting and kind of weird for me to wrap my head around in general. And now seeing the vehicles somehow is making it harder to wrap my head around. I don't know why. I think it's because they call it similar to the gantry lift. It's not moving, right? It's just on the track.
It's on the
doing
track.
Its thing. The reason it's not going up and down.
The reason
right?
I described it that way is because the gantry lift, you have something over you.
Oh,
and
sure.
On the sides and like that kind of front.
Okay.
So you're encased.
Okay. Got it.
But
got
you have
it,
this giant
it.
Opening portal in the front that kind of you see everything through.
Gotcha.
And then I saw this side shot where the side kind of opens where you load, which is interesting.
Gotcha. That makes more sense. Because I'm like, what? Now we're not just slinging webs. We're going to be, I don't know, going building to building or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
It's still not as cool as that thing we saw the swing back and forth where you would be. Maybe that's still something that's coming at some point.
Also at the IAPA Expo, Josh Damaro stated that more inclusion projects will be coming to the parks after the Splash Mountain retheming. This is part of the fifth key in cast member training that was announced in September.
I wonder what this means. Like, I'm sure that there's tons of stuff around the parks that could be changed to be more inclusive, but nothing stood out quite as much as like Splash Mountain. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, and we also got to think, you know, as attractions go down for refurbishment, they could be changed.
They can, yeah. So there are a couple of things, you know, that I think we probably won't see. There are some scenes in some of the dark ride attractions that maybe will be redone.
Sure.
There are a couple of things kind of here and there. Splash Mountain definitely was the biggest.
Yeah.
Of the things,
most obvious.
Yes, the biggest of the things that did need to be changed. But I do see a couple other things that they could redo to represent inclusion and just whatever. There are some things that need to be addressed for sure. However, the other thing that this might mean too with it being inclusion is maybe we're hinting at new attractions. Maybe we're hinting at new shows. Like this could be something as small as retheming one part of one little scene or something as major as a brand new show. They did just move Frozen out of the Hyperion, so who knows what could be following after it? Coco.
The holidays have officially arrived at the Disneyland Resort with a number of seasonal shopping and dining options now available. Black Tap has a Thanksgiving burger. La Brea Bakery has a few different spirits to choose from, like the Merry Manhattan, the Tinseltini, a Mistletoe Margarita, the Joyful Daiquiri, and the Jolly Old Fashioned. Earl of Sandwich, California Churro, Wetzel's Pretzels, and Marcelin's Confectionery also have some festive options. A holiday favorite will not be returning this year. The infamous Disneyland candy canes will not be available.
That was such like a... because there was a lot of people very excited. I feel like the candy canes are more like classically well-known as being able to get on Main Street. However, you could also get them in California Adventure.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people were really excited about the timing of Buena Vista Street reopening and hoping that they were going to be able to get their Disneyland candy cane. However, they have announced that unfortunately that's not going to be a thing this year. And that just breaks my heart. These things are so, I don't even know what makes them so amazing because I've never gotten to experience one myself, but people go crazy for these and they're a lot of people's traditions. And yeah, so it's just very sad to me that the candy canes will not make their appearance this year, but I just hope that will make it even better next year. For merchandise, holiday options are coming to a lot of downtown Disney shops, the Backlot Premier Shop and Buena Vista Street Shops. If you are able, we would encourage a donation to the Toys for Tots box outside of World of Disney, since Disney will donate an additional $1 for every toy donated. You can also donate on shopdisney.com/toysfortots.
I think this is great. They have been supportive of Toys for Tots for a long, long mm-hmm. time. Some of the holiday stuff, there's a ton of holiday stuff that's coming out.
Isn't there always?
So, of course, with all the holiday merchandise, we get things like spirit jerseys and Loungefly backpacks and Pandora stuff and just there's all types of stuff. Are you excited by any of the, I mean, this spirit jersey kind of looks cute.
This is silly.
This matches your mask, doesn't it?
It does. That does. The new Loungefly print does match my mask. And I actually wore that mask today.
Oh.
Small world. The holiday stuff is just, it's so cute and so charming. I always adore seeing all of the different ornaments because they're just, if you haven't looked at Disney ornaments before, they have like the sketchbook collection that just, it looks like you took a still from the film or one of the characters from the film and
sure.
captured them and put them on your tree. They're so darling. I adore them. But there's just, I don't know. There's so much stuff. I think my favorite set of ears, I probably talked about this already, but I really like the new peppermint like twist ears that they have
sure.
this year. Very fun.
Well, you need something to replace the candy canes, right? So it's kind of at least somewhat close, right?
It's as close as we get to a candy cane.
You've never had one even.
I haven't. I've wanted to try one for forever.
Maybe that's our goal. Maybe once the park opens, whatever the first holiday season we need to go.
Oh, maybe it will work.
We got to shoot for the stars. One other thing I wanted to mention, talking about merchandise, we were talking about this earlier in the chat. I want them to come out with a coffee table book of the Mandalorian artwork, because that's so cool.
Maybe it's coming.
Well, Buena Vista Street has been decorated for a little while now for the holidays, but that has finally spilled out onto the main downtown Disney district. Decorated Christmas trees have been added to the planters, toy soldiers have been placed, lights and packages have also been scattered about. Some festive holiday banners have been installed by the old AMC theater, and Christmas music fills the air. A downtown Disney Christmas tree has also been installed near the Esplanade.
So it's not as good as Disney, or as Disney. It's not as good as Christmas or the holidays on Main Street. However, this is going to be as close as we're going to get this season. From the photos that have been posted online, this looks beautiful. The thing that's always just amazing to me is how quickly they're able to transition these areas.
So I've lived in Wisconsin long enough now that it's weird to me to see like Christmas trees without snow. Like there's sun and it looks warm. And I'm like, wait a minute, something's not right
here.
Look
at how shiny and sparkly those ornaments
look. They are. I think this is kind of cool. Of course, without having the decorations in the parks, I'm glad that they decided to do some type of decoration in downtown Disney so you still get a little something. I do think this Christmas tree kind of off the beaten path at the end by the Esplanade is just a strange place to put it. Although I guess with Buena Vista Street open, more people will head mm-hmm. past this. Of course, I'm guessing that they're going to have the big Christmas tree on Buena Vista Street too. So maybe. We'll have to see how that goes.
Mice Chat noticed some Christmas decorations through the front gate of Disneyland recently, giving guests hope that Main Street might reopen, much like Buena Vista Street will soon. Unfortunately, it looks like the decorations were just set up for some form of production in the park, maybe some sort of something for TV, and have been removed. I'm curious because one of our stories later talks about a Disney-specific special, and we know that they were going to be doing
sure.
some Disney holiday TV specials. So I kind of wonder if maybe we're going to see some footage from Main Street in some of those specials. That would be a little extra magic.
I hope so. Also, did you see that with the IAPA thing, Josh DeMauro, for part of his presentation, was actually in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle. Mm-hmm. So people were very excited to see she's still there.
Yeah.
I mean, not that she's going anywhere, but it's nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The former location of the Wonderground Gallery in downtown Disney has received a new Star Wars trading post sign. The new sign gives guests a better idea of what the location is, since the previous exterior didn't exactly say what the store was.
So I've got mixed feelings on this. I think it makes sense. It made me sad at first, like, oh no, what about Wonderground? I'm so worried about Wonderground not returning because that's a fantastic store. But thankfully, after seeing photos, it does not look like it's permanent signage.
That's
it is
true.
Temporary signage. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I just want Wonder. I'm like you. I want Wonderground back. So I'm hoping it'll
I
come
feel
back.
Like it's got to come back once the parks reopen, because the whole point of the Galaxy's Edge merchandise was that it was specific to Galaxy's Edge.
That's
and
true.
Specific to Batuu, that you weren't able to get it anywhere else. So I don't see why they would continue with the shop once Batuu is back in business.
Sure.
Mice Chat posted an aerial update for Disneyland this week. We look forward to these aerial updates. It is like the only like little taste of inside the gates that we get to experience at this point.
Yes.
Scaffolding has come down around Snow White, King Arthur Carousel, and the Haunted Mansion, which shows that they're either completed or mostly completed exterior work on these attractions. From what we saw, it looked like Snow White and the Haunted Mansion, the exterior work was basically done. King Arthur's Carousel did still have like temporary walls up around it, but it was not completely under wraps like it had been previously. Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway has also been going up at a rapid pace. Looks like they're starting to put a roof on it already.
Yeah. It's
crazy.
Amazing because they showed a comparison picture of September, which feels like it was just the other day, even though it's halfway through November at this point. But they've made amazing progress on this. Now, the King Arthur Carousel, the paint job is almost as vivid as the castle's paint job. Like, it's really pops.
On the canopy?
Yes. New Disney Parks Pals collectibles have arrived. Each mystery box contains one of 12 collectibles, with the box being able to fold into an attraction vehicle. For Series 1, a monorail, train, Kilimanjaro Safari truck, Peter Pan's Flight Pirate Ship, and Space Mountain Rocket Ship are the options. The new pals are $9.99 each and have been spotted in World of Disney.
These are cute and fun, and I think it's just an extra like touch that the box that they come in, you can actually fold down into a fun attraction vehicle. Part of me almost wonders, right? So it's a mystery box. So you're opening this hoping to get whichever little character that you desire. Plus, now you have like an extra level and you're trying to get whatever attraction vehicle it is that you desire, right? Because everyone's got a favorite. That's just how it is, right? So they look cute. I think it's a fun thing to do. Some of the characters that you're able to get out of these boxes are, of course, there's two versions of Mickey and two versions of Minnie. We've got two versions of one of our Hatbox ghosts. Looks like we've got Pascal, green and red. So I think that's like happy and angry Pascal.
Sure.
Anyways, so we've got tons of cute little characters.
Is that like Simba and Nala, maybe?
I think that's Simba and Nala, and then it's Stitch, and Stitch's girlfriend, I can't remember, Angel.
Oh.
Stitch and Angel.
Hmm. The other thing that people mentioned about these was before, when they had the Parks Pals, they were only able to like connect to like this pole or whatever. These don't have that. They can kind of stand on their own. So this is kind of a neat idea to turn the box into something as well. I mean, that's pretty dang cool. I like it. That makes me happy.
Black Tap has come up with another tasty treat, this time themed to Mickey Mouse. The special edition shake features a strawberry shake with a vanilla frosted rim with Mickey Mouse sprinkles, all topped with a homemade Mickey Mouse shaped crisp rice treat. White and red rock candy, whipped cream, red sprinkles, and of course a cherry on top. The shake costs $24 and is available daily. This looks, you need to share this shake, I think. It looks very large,
it looks,
but also very delicious.
Very good. I don't know if I would pay $24 for it.
However, but if it's like you and four people that are all sharing this,
I suppose,
amazing dessert, it's so cute.
That is a lot.
It's so cute.
I feel like Black Tap is always way too much, over the top.
Over the top. It is, yeah, definitely maybe a treat that you and I can share when we're there and maybe find a couple friends to share
with. I think
we need
to bring Vern, because Vern can polish it off, but that is too much for me. I'd have such a stomach ache. Oh, Kate in our chat, community manager, you need at least three people to finish those shakes. Bam.
You, I, and we'll find a friend.
Disney posted a preview of the last Minnie the Main Attraction collection this week. The final design is based on fireworks and Disney castles. Like the previous sets, there will be Minnie ears, a mug, pin set, a lounge fly backpack, and a Minnie plush. The final set should be open for merch pass next month.
These are beautiful. I don't even know what to say other than that. I think this was a very good final collection to, or a very good final theme to end this collection. Super, super fun. Very beautiful. I geeked out and was maybe too geeky, but that's fine. I got really excited with the ears. There's a gold castle in the middle of the ears, and it looks an awful lot like Sleeping Beauty's castle to me, and not Cinderella's castle. So I got super excited that the castle silhouette that they're using is our beloved castle at Disneyland.
I still think that of all of the Minnie the Main Attraction things, I still think Space Mountain was my favorite.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. This one's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But I still really like Space Mountain. I don't know.
The Disney Holiday Sing-Along lineup has been announced. Ryan Seacrest will return as host and will include K-pop group BTS, Michael Bublé, Adam Lambert, and more. Plus, returning favorites Derek and Julianne Hough will also be part of the sing-along. The North American touring companies of Frozen, Aladdin, and The Lion King will also make an appearance. Disney's a cappella group, Da Cappella, will also be joining in on the magical holiday fun. For a complete list, check out the link in our show notes. The Disney Holiday Sing-Along will air Monday, November 30th at 8, 7 Central on ABC. Oh, I'm so excited about this.
There's a lot here. I feel like this is going to be amazing. There is such a list of people. I don't know if there's anybody else that you want to pull out of this list.
Katy Perry.
Leslie Odom Jr. Pink? Is going to sing What's This?
Oh.
It's going to be great.
Oh, so fun. So fun.
You know what? I feel like we should, in the chat, we should have like a watch along with the sing along. Mm-hmm. I think that could be fun.
So fun.
This week has a ton of special streams from D23, the official Disney fan club. As of the recording of this episode, all of the public presentations are available on their YouTube page to watch. Topics include the Fantasia legacy, storytelling through merchandise, Marvel's 616, 80 years of Captain America, Minnie and Mickey on their birthday, Walt Disney World Destination Tomorrow, and Epcot, the Magic of Possibility, and more. The one that I watched the other night, I watched the one about merchandising, and it was about Galaxy's Edge. It was kind of interesting. They did have a lot of cool little stories that kind of went along and how they kind of evolved some of the stuff. I know this is a silly thing to think about, but at the very end, they had a disclaimer that said that some of the footage was from before COVID-19 and do not reflect current safety guidelines that are in place or whatever. And I was like, of course, 2020 would have to have that. But it was good. Mm-hmm. They talked to some of the people who came up with the different things and how they picked different merchandise. They also announced some of the things that were Galaxy's Edge things that are coming to Shop Disney as an exclusive. Very, very exciting. They talked about the new lightsabers we talked about in a previous episode that people voted on. They talked a little bit about that. So pretty interesting. I'm really excited this week to watch the Disney World Destination Tomorrow and the Epcot one. Those are just things that I find interesting. Of course, loving the parks.
I'm curious about the Fantasia legacy.
Go watch it. It's up there.
I think
there.
I'm going to have to find some time to do so.
I will also tell you, I think the Fantasia one is only like 20 minutes long.
Because
I think it's very short. Let me click on the link here. So if you go to youtube.com/DisneyD23, all of the links are there if you click on videos. So their Fantasia one is 15 minutes and 41 seconds.
I might have to watch that tonight.
Their Marvel Celebrates 80 Years of Captain America was over an hour long.
Whew.
Wow. But they're cool. They're put together really well, and I like that they do this virtual stuff.
So one other thing that we wanted to note is the Grand Californian is reopening. However, there will not be dining, shopping, and they're only going to be down to one pool. Some other services that will not be available include bell service, which will still deliver luggage, but just not escorting guests, Disney Floral and Gifts, dry cleaning and valet, self-service laundry, though, will remain available, shipping services, and valet parking. So, good news that the hotel is reopening. However, it's just not going to look exactly the same as the last time that you were there visiting. Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer Vern's going to try and stump us with some Disney trivia. You're going to ask us what? Maybe four questions and a bonus? We're going to try to answer them. Emphasis on try.
Yeah.
And we will get the correct answer after our discussion topic. What do you have for us this week, Vern?
Well, we have been hinting to the listeners that we needed some more questions, and they have pulled through for us.
Excellent.
So we are diving back into the listener-submitted file, and we have got some good ones for you. I think they're good ones. They stumped me as I was going through them and picking out tonight's questions.
Oh,
so, hopefully they're going to be good ones for you. I usually when they totally stump me, they're really easy for you. So we'll see how this goes. So question number one, submitted by listener Christopher K / Olivia C.
Ooh.
I don't know how it was submitted.
I'm nervous if this was like submitted by two people.
Yeah, I just go by what the spreadsheet tells me. Producer James puts the spreadsheet together. So, where is a time capsule buried in Disneyland, and when will it be opened?
Dang it.
It's called the Time Castle.
Yeah.
And it's buried in the compass thing in front of the castle. And
is it the
75th birthday or some weird thing
so.
Like that?
Or it's some weird number. It's not actually an anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember thinking 100 before, but that wasn't right.
Yeah, it wasn't. So we'll go with 75th.
Okay, and it's in the it's under the compass that's in front of the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Time Castle because they had to be fancy about it.
Because it's Disney. They had to make it more magical.
And that's your final answer?
That's it.
Okay, then.
Yes.
Question number two, submitted by listener Chris Y. Who signed the permit to operate the elevator in the Tower of Terror?
Ooh.
Who worked on that?
I don't know.
That's a great question,
Chris.
That is
a really great question. I don't know. I think it's an Imagineer. I don't know.
Hmm.
Who, though?
That's a great... I just like the idea of this question.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to say... Who worked on it?
I don't know. My gut's Tony Baxter, just because it's Tony Baxter.
Oh, that's a good one.
And Tony Baxter would have...
Are you saying Tony Baxter?
I think so. That's my random Hail Mary.
I'm going to... See, I was thinking Tony Baxter, too, although Liberty put in the chat XNTCO, and it kind of makes me want to go that way because it'd be like a great nod to... Because it's kind of like a spooky... You know what I mean?
Oh,
kind of like a nod. So I'll go with Liberty and say XNTCO. Final answer.
Is it the real permit or like some like prop permit?
I think it's a prop.
Oh.
All right.
Oh, yeah, okay. I don't know, though. I was thinking like the legit person that signed it.
No, because that'd be like a city person who would like come and do it would be my guess.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's our final answer, Vern.
Question number three, submitted by listener Donna S., what was the first music loop at Disneyland that is still there today?
Wow.
Bonus if you know where you can hear it.
The first music loop.
I feel like I'm going to say the first music loop is in Adventureland.
Oh.
And I want to say it's just like the background music of the land.
I'm going to say New Orleans Square. And it's like, yeah, the music and the sounds and everything. That's what I'm going to say.
Those are your final answers?
Yep. Adventureland for Teresa, New Orleans Square for me.
Okay. Question number four, submitted by listener Todd B. Wally Bogue may be best known for his iconic and record-breaking run as Peck's Bill in the Golden Horseshoe Review, but he also provided the voice for another iconic character in a Disneyland attraction. Who?
Was he in Country Bears?
Oh, maybe. I feel like I should know this one. Oh, are you going to say Country Bears?
I'm going to say Country Bears.
Just to be different... I'm going to say maybe he did the voice. Maybe he did Big Thunder. Maybe.
Maybe it has nothing to do with Frontierland and he was in like Tomorrowland or something.
Yeah. I'm going to say Big Thunder and you said Country Bears. Mm-hmm. So
Those are your final answers?
That's the final answer.
Okay.
That's as good as we're getting.
And for your bonus question, submitted by listener Jamie B., what was the first attraction to use the Omnimover system?
Ooh, it was Adventure Through Inner Space, wasn't it? No.
I think it was the Haunted Mansion, wasn't it?
So Haunted Mansion was 69. When did Adventure Through Inner Space open?
I thought in the 70s. Although now you're making me second guess.
I don't. I think it was. Gosh darn it.
Are you going to say Adventure Through Inner Space? That was your first, like.
I think I'm going to say Adventure Through Inner Space because I think I had always. I don't remember. I kind of have this gut feeling that I think I always thought it was the Haunted Mansion, but I was wrong.
Why do I feel like it's going to be something we're not even mentioning?
Probably.
And we're going to like be like, oh, of course.
Yeah, probably.
I'm going to say Haunted Mansion because.
That was your gut.
Why not?
And that's your final answer?
That's the final answer.
Okay. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? Do you think they got the right answers? Stay listening after the discussion topic to find out.
Well, this week, we have another very special guest. We're welcoming former cast member Jesse Lopez to the show. Now, Jesse used to work in the Fantasyland merchandise area, so he is totally in the right crowd because you know how much we love our Disney merch. So anyways, welcome to the show, Jesse. We're so excited to have you here.
Thank you very much, Tag and Teresa. I'm really excited to be here and talk to you guys.
We love talking to cast members, so I'm going to make the shout out like we have the last couple times. If you are a cast member, former or current, and would love to be on the show, get in contact with us, feedback@dlweekly.net or somewhere on social media. In fact, Jesse reached out to us on Instagram, and that's why he's on the show. So let's start with your Disney story, Jesse. So kind of what got you involved in Disney? What got you to where you are now in your Disney life?
So I was 18 at the time when I was working at an Office Depot. It's like an office supply store.
Oh, yeah.
A friend of mine came in, and it's a high school friend, and he saw me working in the computer section. It was really late at night. And he's like, dude, I need to get you out of here. You got to go apply at Disneyland. And at that time, I didn't even know people could work at Disneyland. I don't know why. I just had no concept of people working at Disneyland. So he actually worked on the Matterhorn and Space Mountain. So when he asked me to apply, it was like April of 1989. And so I went into Team Disney Anaheim, and I applied, waited a few weeks, and I got back one of those letters that said, I'm sorry, you know, you didn't get the job. So
oh, no.
I was a little discouraged, but I kept working. And then,
well, that's the end of the interview, folks. No,
that's the end. Yeah. But he encouraged me to apply again. And so I applied again in the summer, and this time I did get the job, and I ended up starting in October of 99, and they placed me in merchandise. I think they placed me there because I used to work at McDonald's. Oh, you know, they saw that I had some sort of cash handling experience. So they said, hey, you know, we'll put you in stores. And so I started training in October of 99 on Main Street. And that was pretty much 3 days of pretty intense training. It just involved a lot of cash handling and just learning guest service and whatnot. And yeah, and then after that, so I worked there until about 2005 in stores. And then after that, I kind of left Disney to try to look for like a grown-up job, I guess. That's the way I looked at it then. You know, something that involved my profession, because I actually studied to be a graphic designer. So I thought, okay, now I need to go out and get a real job. And not that working at Disneyland is not a real job, but I had to go out. And so I couldn't find anything in graphic design because I didn't have much experience. I just had my schooling. So I went to a job placement place, and they just told me, well, you know, you used to work at Disneyland. We have this perfect position for you. And so they placed me in special events at Disneyland. So this is like a temp job. But I was there for almost a year, just working in special events. And that was actually the team that invited all the media and all the special guests for the 50th anniversary of Disneyland.
Oh, very
cool. Then after that, I just kind of, the job was over after about a year. So then I got another position at their PR department at Team Disney. And that only lasted for a few months. But that pretty much just consisted of me just cataloging all of the newspapers and sort of mentions that the 50th anniversary had had into the PR department's these archives that they have. So it was like cutting out a lot of newspapers and whatnot. And then after that, I went out and got a job, in a design job, but I still kind of had that itch to work at Disneyland. And she's my wife now, but at the time she was my girlfriend. She was working at the Castle Helder shop in Fantasyland. I still wanted to work at Disneyland. So I knew the Castle Helder shop at Disneyland is a leasee. So it's like an independent store.
Sure.
So we got to know the owner pretty well. So I was talking to him and he said, "Hey, you should come on back to Disneyland, you know, part time." So I was doing Disneyland part time from about 2006 to 2012. And then in 2012, that's when I just got too busy for Disneyland. And so I had to quit, unfortunately.
Dang. So prior to you applying, just kind of because your friend said, "Hey, I think you'd be a great fit and this would be fun for you." Were you had you been to Disneyland? Were you a fan of the company prior to all that? Or was it just kind of a, "Hey, sounds like a fun place to work. Why not?" kind of a thing?
Oh, yeah. No, I've always been a fan of Disney and I've always been a fan of Disneyland. And to me, Disneyland, I mean, I grew up in Long Beach, California, LA, I guess. For me, my parents, I wouldn't say we grew up poor or anything, but we weren't necessarily super rich. So going to Disneyland was very much a special thing that we saved up to do once a year. And that was the one thing that we looked forward to. So for me, going to Disneyland was like this incredible thing. So the concept of even working there was just so foreign to me, you know? So, but before then, yeah, I loved Disney. I loved Mickey Mouse. I loved watching, I remember watching Disney Afternoon stuff, you know, Darkwing Duck, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And that was my favorite thing to do when I was coming home from school. So, when I got the chance to work at Disneyland, it was very surreal because I just, I never imagined myself ever working at Disneyland. And, you know, it's a very interesting experience to go from seeing Disneyland in one way and then mm-hmm. experiencing it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
I always think of that when we talk to cast members, like, you know, there's some people that, you know, the magic stays and it's not a big deal. And then there's part of it that the magic is ruined forever. And, mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, I can't even imagine going back to Disneyland because it was, you know, work or whatever. It sounds to me like anyway, like that didn't kind of wear off on you, which is good.
Well, I think for me, at least, I learned about the magic. Because, like I said, going to Disneyland was like a once a year sort of thing for me growing up. If we could go to Disneyland that one time a year, so I liked going to Disneyland, but I didn't necessarily know of the magic side of it or just all the hard work that the cast members do to create that sort of special environment for people who visit. You know. Whether they're there for their first time or if they've been there 50 times before. So for me, it was more about learning about all the magic and then really appreciating all that magic.
When you visit Disneyland as a guest, which way do you kind of have a way that you attack the park? Is there a certain way you go? So for Tag and I, we typically go left towards Adventureland on our first day. But do you go forward towards Fantasyland, perhaps right and over to Tomorrowland? Do you bypass Adventureland and go to Critter Country or Galaxy's Edge? What's kind of the way that you like to go about the park on your first day?
So I was thinking about this question a lot because I guess I'm not as conscious of it when you're there. But when I started thinking about it, I started thinking I usually go towards the right when I get to the main gate. I usually go towards the right to Tomorrowland. And usually me and my wife, since it's kind of weird because we work there and sometimes we would just go to the park after we were off on a shift or something. So once we stopped working there full time, it was kind of like this, well, we'll just go later in the day. And so we'll usually get there around like 4, 5 p.m. And then at that time, we make our way to Tomorrowland. And the reason we do that is because we make our way all the way around the park so that we're in Adventureland / New Orleans by the time it gets dark. Because we really like to be in that area when it gets nice and dark. It's all the lights come on. It's just really beautiful. Not that Tomorrowland isn't, but we just there's something about that area that we just really like.
Oh, there's so much. I feel like that's the left side of the park, Adventureland, New Orleans Square. There's just, especially New Orleans Square, there's just so much charm to that side of the park. And it just like comes alive in a different way at night. So I totally get it.
Definitely. And
Phantasmic.
That's why I want to go to one of those 24-hour days if they ever have those again, because I love Disneyland at night more than any other time of day. Disneyland at night, the way they light the park, and it just adds so much more atmosphere, especially things like Adventureland and New Orleans Square. Even Fantasyland is beautiful at night.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of fun memories working at Fantasyland at night. Because I used to work in the stores, but also I used to be part of the stock team. So we would stay later than anyone else in the store and restock everything. And so I have these really fond memories of working in the princess shop, which is the shop that's immediately inside of the castle. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the inside of the castle, but it was the princess shop then. I don't know what it is now, but I just have a lot of fond memories of restocking that area and just listening to When You Wish Upon a Star and just having that just blaring and just it, not finding it annoying or anything, just finding it so kind of just nostalgic, even when I was there working, because Pinocchio used to be one of my favorite movies when I was growing up. So there was just something really special about listening to that as I'm restocking things. And it's really funny because once all the guests are gone, that music is really loud. So even as I'm inside working, I could still hear it.
That's what I was going to say, because during the day, the crowd is so loud from people talking and walking and, you know, people pushing strollers and kids screaming and excitement and everything. And so
I like how it was screaming in excitement and not like screaming in terror. I'm glad.
Well, they're screaming in like tantrums because they're hungry or something. But but I'm saying, like, you know, there's excitement of, you know, I want to go on something, or oh, there's, you know, the princess or whatever. And so, you know, when you are there early in the morning or late at night, when they are open late at night and you can be there and there's less guests, there's definitely... that does seem a lot louder than it does in the middle of the day where you're like, is there music here?
Yeah, there's definitely no, maybe Disney should invest in like a timer that as soon as the park closes, the volume just goes down gradually because they don't turn that down. And that's pretty much anywhere around the park. I know, for instance, when I was working at some of the shops in Adventureland, the music from the Jungle Cruise is extremely loud, and you hear the Trader Sam kind of music.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're like chanting in the background. You hear that loud, even over by the bazaar.
Wow. That's
shop. So
crazy. Yeah, I feel like you like have to really be like, you can kind of almost sort of hear it when you're on the attraction. So the fact that when the boats aren't running, which I mean,
well, the boats
are
pretty
loud.
Yeah.
You don't really think about that, but that's crazy that it's so loud that you can hear it over like in the shops across the way.
I wish Disney would make some sort of like documentary on Disney Plus about empty Disneyland at night, I just remember it being incredibly just beautiful to just walk down an empty walkway all by myself. And I would be there very late at night, sometimes 1-2 in the morning, restocking everything. And so I would have to sometimes make my way down from Critter Country or New Orleans. And, you know, it's a really long walk all the way back to costuming. And it's just everything looks beautiful and everything just sounds so loud. And the music just perfectly starts mixing in into the next land. And maybe they should do something on Disney Plus where they showcase
I think that would be amazing. And I think it's really interesting to hear that the transition, like how the music transitions doesn't just work when the park is full of people, but the fact that you're walking literally in an area completely by yourself, no noise except for the park noise itself, and that transition is still like a beautiful, seamless transition from land to land. That's super interesting. That's, and I think that speaks volumes to the like engineering and the thought behind how they did that originally. So that's super cool.
This just reminds me a lot of our conversation we had last year with Chrysanthi, who when we were in the parks last year for D23, we met up with her and she said, she did the thing of when we went into It's a Small World find something in here that you didn't notice before or something like that. And so I feel like that would be a really great thing to have in the middle, you know, after the park is closed and listening to all of this audio, you know, find something you haven't heard before. And I'm sure you hear so much more. There's so much I want to talk about this, but I want to get to this last intro question. Then we can just start randomly asking questions. So what is your favorite attraction?
I had to think really hard about this because I love all the attractions. But I think if I have to be, if I have to be 100% honest, I think it's the attractions at Disney Sea, Tokyo Disney Sea.
There's one,
and I can't remember what it's called, but it's inside of the volcano that's in the middle of the park.
Is it the Journey to the Center of the Earth?
I think. Yeah, it's Journey to the Center of the Earth. That's right. Yeah, and there's that attraction is just so just intense and just so well themed, and it was just so much fun to ride. That I think that's my favorite attraction of all the Disney parks. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're kind of on this quasi roller coaster in the middle of a volcano. So,
I mean, I've heard that Tokyo DisneySea is like the best Disney park anywhere in the world, which brings me to a follow-up question. So how many Disney parks have you been to?
Well, I've been to Tokyo DisneySea. I've been to Tokyo Disneyland. I've been to all the Florida parks and then the two here. I've yet to go to France, but my wife has gone to France and she loved it. So that's on my bucket list there. And of course, I want to go to Hong Kong and Shanghai. So
I'm glad that I can't go now. Well, I mean, not glad, but like I'm glad that I haven't gone yet because I feel the longer I wait to go, the more fully fleshed out they're going to get because like Shanghai didn't open with a ton of attractions. Right. So I kind of want to wait a little bit to see like some of their expansion that they've done. You know, Hong Kong is doing a bunch of expansion right now. Tokyo is actually doing a huge bit of expansion, which we talk about in the news a little bit. But so there's all this stuff going on. So it'll be nice to, you know, I'm glad that I didn't go a few years ago, although I did go to Paris and I loved Paris. So it's the most, when you get there, it's the most beautiful Disney park, I think.
Yeah, that's what my wife says, that the castle is like the most beautiful castle she's seen.
Yes.
And I'm really looking forward to that. If you guys ever get a chance to, though, I think Japan, Japan itself is just an incredibly beautiful country. Mm-hmm. But going to the Disney parks there is an experience unto itself. And I'm not trying to sell anything, but it's just so amazing going to that level of Disney at a different country.
I just think about everything I've ever heard about the Oriental Land Company who leases the Disney intellectual property for these parks is, and I've said this on the show before, and I don't know why, I just love saying this, but basically they go, we want an attraction, here's an unlimited amount of money, make it happen.
That's basically it, yeah.
Yeah, and so they make really immersive, detailed, no expense spared. It's like the Jurassic Park of attractions. You know what I mean? Like, you know, spared no expense. So I feel like that's what Tokyo is like, and that's why people think Disney Sea is so great, because they don't, unlike the American parks that are owned directly by Disney, or Euro Disney that for a long time was owned partially by another company as well. They aren't as gung-ho with, we're just going to throw a bunch of money at it, you know. And, of course, they use the Imagineers and stuff, and it's just amazing.
Yeah. No, I love Tokyo. I mean, I've been there a couple times now, and I'm kind of obsessed with it. Also on a local level, because I live in Long Beach, California, and I don't know if you know any of the history behind the Port Disney that was supposed to be built here in Long Beach, California. Super obsessed with it, and I've actually produced a little mini documentary for a newspaper. I work for a newspaper here in Long Beach. So I produced a mini documentary for it, and I've just researched it to no end because I'm just so fascinated by what could have been here and where I live.
Well, that's a whole nother story that maybe we'll probably cover one of these times on the podcast. But that was, for those who don't know, that was the period of time where Disney was pitting Anaheim against Long Beach of who was going to give them the better deal to do their Disney expansion. So if Long Beach would have, I think when it came down to it, they were never going to go to Long Beach. I think they were just trying to get a better deal out of Anaheim. But they were going to build basically what is Tokyo DisneySea in Long Beach and integrate the Queen Mary and the Spruce Goose, all that stuff integrated into it, because that's where all that is now. And Anaheim was just going to be Disneyland, and they were going to, have, a bus or something bring people from one park to the other. But
I think this sounds like a fabulous future discussion topic.
Yes.
History of this.
Because I feel like that's
a whole different other
perhaps
rabbit hole.
Jesse needs to come on and talk about that
for
when
sure.
we talk about
yeah,
that.
For sure.
I would love to.
Before we get distracted by that, cast members, I think, are such wonderful, magical human beings. The fact that every day, right, they go to work with a smile on their face and all they do is provide these like wonderful, beautiful memories for all of us guests, which I know guests aren't always maybe the easiest people to be working with. And I don't know, but I kind of feel
I would say frequently or not.
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Jesse, but I feel like maybe Fantasyland might be a little bit more trying on one's nerves than maybe one of the other lands, just because there are a lot more smaller kids there. So maybe parents are a little more on edge because their children are sprinting all around or, whatever. So I could see how tensions might be higher there too.
So
I'm not crazy. That's funny. But it is interesting because I feel like Fantasyland has really cool like ebbs and flows to busyness in that section of the park. And it kind of all like goes with like little kids' schedules, right? Like there's nap time, so it's like slower when like kids would normally be doing nap time stuff, but then there's also crazy busy times that you want to be like, nope, I'm going to go over this way and we'll hit up Peter Pan's flight later because that is a very long line.
Definitely. I mean, when I worked there, when you first start, you have to work all the later shifts, but then as you get more seniority, you start being able to get some of the earlier shifts. So I started working in the morning, doing some of that stock work, just working the cash registers. And back then, I think this was 99, 2000, they used to have story time in the back of I think it's the Bibbidi Bobbidi shop now.
Sure, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique.
Yeah, that one, yeah. But it used to be the Tinkerbell's toy shop.
Oh,
so they used to have a library in the back of the shop, where every morning they would have a story time and they would have a princess and her prince read this story to all these kids. And it would be the cutest thing. And then they would have these shows with Merlin pulling out the sword.
Yes. That show.
those shows were all just designed for kids. And so there would be tons of kids in the area, especially in the beginning parts of the day. And then as the day progressed, you started getting more adults. And then especially during the summer, they had like live performances in Carnation Cafe. Especially during the summer, they would have like big bands play, and then you'd get all the adults dressed up.
In the Carnation Garden things.
Garden. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah. And so it was really interesting to see that kind of ebb and flow of the type of guests that was in Fantasyland. In the morning, you got all the kids, in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then as you progressed, you started getting more of the adults, and they were all dressed up in sort of like zoot suits and whatnot.
Oh, fun.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the cool things. That was one of the things when they transitioned to be the Princess Fantasy Fair, the people were all up in arms that they were going to lose, why during the day they do like the little story times in there. And sometimes still during the summer or some weekend nights or whatever, they still have dancing there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun just watching people come and dance just specifically just for that. And especially seeing a lot of older couples that would also get dressed up, and you could tell that, they were just this is like their big thing to do on a Saturday night in the summer. So it was just really cute to see.
You know, I have to imagine.
Wow, that just sounds like super magical to me.
I have to imagine working in merchandise in the morning that you're probably pretty bored, because as far as I know, every time I've gone in any store in the morning at Disneyland, it's always been dead because everybody's like, I want to go down attractions.
I don't know. That sounds like the perfect time to shop to me.
No, I mean, it is. But the thing is that I don't like you and like maybe 10 other people think that way.
Perfect.
Well, I think I mean, I worked in both roles. So I worked in I worked as a cashier, a greeter. And then I also worked in stock. So if you're working in stock, you're there at like 5 in the morning waiting for these, like, I don't know if it's like that still, but we used to wait for these it was like a little train that they would just leave in front of our shop. And we had to make sure that we had it all emptied by 8 a.m. before they started doing the early morning stuff. And so that involved basically just taking all the stock and putting it above the Tinkerbell toy shop, or we would have to run it downstairs to the storage that was underneath the Tinkerbell toy shop. So it was a lot of running around and just trying to beat that clock. But if you were there just as like a cashier, then yeah, it was really slow. For the first 2 hours, I think it was really slow. But it was funny enough, you got a lot of parents who were coming in there, and it was usually like either a mom or just a dad, whoever the parent was, who didn't have to watch the kids or stay in line with them for like Peter Pan or Pinocchio or something. So it was usually the one taking the break who was shopping and just getting stuff for their kids.
So I've read about these called kind of like train things. And I kind of imagine them, correct me if I'm wrong, because you obviously are the expert here, but I kind of imagine them, you know, when you're at the airport, like at the airport.
That's what I was thinking too, with the baggage carts.
Like, yeah, I think of like the baggage cart thing where it's kind of got the little like car thing in front, and then it's got a train of different, I don't know, sections that you can like close the sides on so your merchandise doesn't go spilling out as you're driving through. Whatever.
That's exactly what they were. Yeah, that's exactly what they were. And they would just dump them in front of the Tinkerbell toy shop. And then, you know, it was our job to make sure that they were empty. But yeah, no, they look exactly like that. Yeah.
Interesting.
So you guys, I mean, if you guys were getting those things, I mean, you guys, I mean, I'm sure everybody, this will come as a shock to no one except for me. So you guys went through a lot of merchandise every day.
No, not at
oh,
all.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. I mean, we got those every single day. So
it would be fascinating to know how many like ears are sold in one day at Disneyland or something, like just some one specific item, you know, or like autograph books. I feel like autograph books.
Well, and just think about, they sell those things everywhere. Yeah. So if your store, let's say your location, sells a bunch of them, mm-hmm. Well, what the heck is everybody else selling them? It's like, I've never even seen that many of that item in the park before.
Yeah, we used to sell, I think our number one thing when I was there was something they had just introduced, and it was called the Light Chaser.
And Light Chaser?
Yeah, and it's basically like this little toy that spins. And lights that would just spin. And mm-hmm. I remember they showed it to us when we first got a bunch of them, and they had Sorcerer Mickey on top of it. And we were like, aww. Well, this is kind of, we just looked at them in like a cynical way. Like, we're not kids. Right. So we're just looking at them like, well, this is kind of silly. Who's going to pay $12 for
right,
this?
Who's buying this thing? Mm-hmm.
And it was like our number one thing that we used to sell. And it was primarily because we would put them in the cash wrap areas. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like an impulse item sort of buy. And so, you know, the kids would look at them and they'd be like, I want that. And it's like, mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. So that was like our number one thing we used to sell when I was there. And
those things are still crazy popular, and bubble wands. I feel like there's so many kids running around with their little magical bubble wands.
Now, I'll say, Jesse, you could definitely tell that you worked there a while ago, because I can't imagine anything being $12 at Disneyland anymore.
that was quite a while ago. In fact, we used to sell like the cheapest thing. I remember one time someone came up to us, and it was like an older man, and we were working. It was me. I was stocking the candy cart, which is right outside of Tinkerbell Toy Shop. And an older man came up to us, and he kind of just came up to us and said, what's the cheapest thing that you guys sell here at the park? And so we actually had a sucker that was in the shape of a heart that had Mickey's face on it. And we would say, that right there, sir, is a dollar. It's actually 99 cents. And I remember, like, just we used to have that answer ready. It's like, if anybody asks what the cheapest thing here is, it's that right there. It's a sucker that's 99 cents. I don't know if they still sell that. I doubt it, but I should look for it next time the park opens. Yeah.
They have like a bouquet of Mickey head suckers that I see. I don't know how much those are. I don't think I've seen a single sucker.
I think the cheapest thing I've seen recently at a Disney park, at least of the stuff that I'm interested in looking at, are things like postcards.
Yeah.
Because I think that those are like $2 or $3 a thing or whatever, but nothing too crazy. So I've got to ask, well, let's start at the beginning. So at the very beginning, so when you got hired in, did you want to do merchandising? What was obviously when you applied, you were kind of like, oh, probably didn't even think about it. But was merchandising kind of where you wanted to be, or did you want to work attractions, or did you want to do something different?
So I wanted to work where my friend Bo was working, and he was working in Space Mountain at the time. And he was also doing partial shifts over at Matterhorn. So I wanted to do that. I thought that was really cool. And he would have these like really interesting stories, really wild stories about some of the stuff that was happening backstage and some of the people that were working there. And I just really wanted to work in Space Mountain. But when I got there, you know, they have the whole casting process. And I guess I had kind of an advantage since I had applied before and then I applied again. So I knew what the process was. But one of the pointers that my friend told me the second time around was, you have to be way more outgoing. You have to be the first one to answer the question, because they, when they interviewed you, at least back then, they would interview you with three other people. So they kind of interview you at the same time. And you kind of, when they asked the question, he was like, you should be the first one to answer that question. And so, and at the time I was not a very outgoing person. I was very introverted. So it took a lot for me to do that, but you know, when I got the job, Disneyland kind of forced me out of my introverted shell and, I mean, with all the training and whatnot, but once I got to work there, in stores, it's this weird feeling where, especially at the time, there used to be a costuming used to be a thing where you'd go to Disneyland and you'd get your costume and then you'd wear it and then you'd have to turn it back in. Mm-hmm. Now I think that they let you take them home or something like that. But so it was very special to, you know, go to costuming and get changed and then, you know, go out into where all the guests were. And it felt like you were putting on this like armor in a way. Mm-hmm. And it really pushed me out of my shell. And I just became way more personable and way more just engaging with people, and it really just brought me out of that shell. So, I never wanted to work in stores. but I think to sum it all up, I never wanted to work in stores, but, once they, placed me in stores, then it was really exciting because at the time you would just hop from land to land until you got enough seniority where you could stay in one land.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so I remember the first couple months, I mean, I pretty much just went all over the park and I worked at every single place. And every single store in the park was just this new little adventure that I was going on. And it was just very exciting just to continually be learning things. Because even though everything is pretty much the same behind the cash wrap, there's different rules to things. There's different, you know, ways to stock things. And it sounds mundane, but I just got really interested and involved in how people did certain things, because you know, you never knew when you'd be back at you know, in Tomorrowland, or you'd be back over in New Orleans Square, and you know, you had to remember those things because you know, they remember you, so you know, they want to make sure that you're learning these things. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting and exciting, and you know, the desire to work in attractions kind of just faded away after a couple of years.
Sure. So. You know, I'm kind of like that too, where I like to have variety in my workday. I feel like if I'm doing the same thing every single day, it gets very boring and tedious. And so it's such an interesting thing. You know, one of the things I liked about attractions, and I've seen this firsthand when I've been to the parks, is, you know, even if you're at one attraction, you switch between, you know, every few, you know, few minutes, half hour, whatever, you rotate between, you know, you're in the line, you're loading people, you're you know, whatever. So it's very nice to kind of have that variety. And so it's kind of neat that, you know, in merchandising, you think, well, what can you do? You work the register, you merchandise things, you greet guests and tell them about things if they have questions. And that's kind of it. But if you're constantly going from store to store or around, you get a totally different, it's like working at a totally different place every day.
Well, you're not only that too, but you kind of go into whatever role you're working in that land. And the costume really helped. I mean, back then, the men's costume for Frontierland, for instance, had like a little bolo tie and had like a little corduroy vest. And you really felt like you were like this little cowboy. I know this is, it sounds weird, but you really felt like you were in that role. So it really helped to sell that, you know, to the people that the guests that were coming in. It really helped to just bring out that magic, I guess, and just give it to them, you know, just kind of pretend it helped you pretend. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's really cool. Cause I've always loved and appreciated all of the different costumings, you know, especially from land to land and even sometimes from like shop to shop and for sure from attraction to attraction, that they're just so different and unique. So it's really cool that, you know, as a guest, like I noticed that, but I think that's even speaks more volumes to the power of the costume, right? If you as the cast member put your, you know, like it helps you buy into the magic as well. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I know. It definitely helped.
So of all the stores you worked at, what was your favorite store? Or do you have one?
Or what was your favorite land? If you want to narrow it down to a store.
I think my favorite store that I worked in was the Mad Hatter in Fantasyland.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the reason for that was because I was also a hat writer. And that was a lot of fun writing on those hats. And it was just exciting every time you rode in. And even if you were like a seasoned veteran on, you know, riding those hats, like there was still this like level of pressure because there's usually a little kid or a mom or a dad on the other side of that hat writing machine who's expecting perfection. And if you don't give it to them, you know, you'd hate to disappoint. So, yeah.
It's so sad because nowadays those machines are, they don't let you do it. Like you plug the hat in, you hit the button and it is exactly the same every single time, which is nice for consistency, but kind of sad because there's no art in it anymore.
It was definitely artistic. I've tried to describe to people before what hat writing was like. It's literally like everyone had their own, handwriting version of hat writing. So everyone wrote differently. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the machine, but it's basically like this, it's a sewing machine that has like a little pull switch at the bottom that rotates in circles. So you can go clockwise and counterclockwise, and that's how you would write every single word, every single letter on those hats.
Wow.
And so you'd have to do it really, really fast because you only had such, you know, a certain amount of time. And we used to have these de-stitching tools that we could take out thread in case we messed up. But
sure,
after the rule was if you messed up three times, you'd have to throw away that hat. So you didn't want to do that because you're wasting merchandise, but at the same time, you also don't want to look like you can't write on a hat in front of a guest. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, that was a lot of fun, writing on hats. So I think the Mad Hatter was probably my favorite because it always got really busy too, especially, right after the fireworks or especially right after a parade.
So with hat writing, this is like stupidly fascinating to me. Was there some sort of like, I don't like training? Did they try, you know, was it kind of like when, like, if you're like the characters, right? Your autographs, you kind of go through a school to make sure that, you know, you can write correctly. So was there some sort of similar training for hat writing, or did they kind of let you put your own spin on it? How did that work exactly?
No, there was actually training. There was, I want to say it was 2 or 3 days of training. And basically what it consisted of was going downstairs into the stock area. There's a whole stock area underneath Fantasyland. And so it basically consisted of going down there into like this little room, and we'd be there for 3 hours at a time, just writing on hats on these really old, kind of like almost about to die machines.
Yeah.
And the theory behind that was, if you can write on these machines, then you're going to be perfectly okay writing on the machines upstairs. So
I can imagine you get on one of the upstairs machines, you're like, wow, this one's so much easier.
It was kind of like night and day. but no, we just learned the alphabet. And then after that, you know, it was just bunch of practice. We practiced actually on the hats that were discarded from upstairs. So, and it was a lot of fun. I got an extra 50 cents per hour every time I worked.
That's
as a hat writing shift. Yeah, which was great. It was a lot of fun. Especially after a while, you got good enough where you kind of got competitive with a couple of other hat writers. So I remember one of the things that we would try to do is see how much text we could get in a small child size Mickey Mouse ears. And so we would always have like these little competitions where we're just writing as much as we can in the smallest little stitching as we can do. So yeah, it was a lot of fun doing that and training for that too.
Very cool.
I have to imagine that I'm sure you guys, when you did this, you probably had a form or something. They'd write the name down so you know how to spell it correctly. But I just imagine some of the names you probably had to try to spell and write out. And you're like, what the heck?
It was a lot of pressure. Yeah, it was definitely a lot of pressure. We had like this little notepad that we would just keep next to the sewing machine, and we would just write down what the name was. And sometimes we would just have the parents write it down for us.
Sure.
Sometimes, you know, most of the time the names were pretty easy to just spell out because you get repetitive sort of names that you're asked for over and over again. Mm-hmm. But a couple times, like for instance, for me at least, the hardest name for me to write on those hats, and I remember this very well, was Jasmine with a Z in the middle.
Oh.
So it was Jazmin. And so the way that you work those machines, you're going in circles, but then you have to also anticipate that Z, and the Z was in this upward motion where then you would have to go and make a loop and go all the way back down and then go back and write the other letter. So it was it was really hard to do Z's, especially in the middle of a name. Cause you really have to think about the next letter, as you're writing. And so that was the hardest one. I remember the first time I tried writing that, I had to hand that over to a more senior cast member because I just couldn't get it. And then after a while, I just kept practicing. I got really good at it. So, but yeah, that was a hard one to do.
I can imagine.
You know, it just reminds me. So when we went for D23, I feel like this was a bigger oopsie than a hat, but we were at the Crystal Shop, I think it was, on Main Street. And that last year we had two exchange students, and one of them was Simone, which is pretty easy. It's spelled Simon with an E, so Simone, easy. But then I had one made for our Polish exchange student whose name is Kacper, so it's Kacper. Well, I gave her the name, I wrote it down, whatever, I gave it to her, and she said, you know, it'll be 10 minutes or whatever. So I went outside and was on Main Street or whatever. I came back, and she said, here you go, and I looked at it, and it was Kacper, and I'm like, this isn't spelled right, and I felt bad because it's on a mug,
right? Yeah,
that, you know, who else, I mean, what are they gonna do with it? Throw it away? I mean, they probably did. Maybe it became somebody's practice cup.
Someone's practice cup, there you go.
Yeah, we used to also do these little flourishes at the end of the names. I have to send you guys a picture of what they look like, but we used to do these flourishes at the end where we used to make little flowers. Or some of us would make like little hearts, and some of us who were really, really good at it used to make Mickey silhouettes on it. And so, but we actually got a note from management after a couple months, because we kept doing it, that we had to stop doing it because not all of us could do the flowers, the hearts, and the Mickeys. So for consistency, they said we had to stop doing it. So we were bummed out because we were kind of like the squad of of guys who and girls too who were just really good at writing at these hats at the Mad Hatter. So it was a lot of fun.
Wow. That's, you know, that's not even a job that I
would have, thought about,
but clearly someone, you know, someone is embroidering the names on the hats. Mm-hmm. But wow, that was,
you never got a hat with your name embroidered on it, did you?
No, I have a stocking downstairs that I had them embroider my name on the stocking that I bought. However, that was a machine. That was not someone working the machine like Jesse was.
It's not nearly as cool as without the human touch of artistry with it, I guess. You know, a machine's going to do it the same no matter what. I can get it done anywhere.
So, every name was different. It was just like a little signature.
So somehow, Jesse, we've only like scratched the surface of your time at Disneyland. So let's fast forward a little bit and let's talk about your time when you did like the special events stuff that was with the 50th anniversary.
I was a trainer for a little while and I kind of got bored of that. So that's when I decided to go look for a job that had to do with my graphic design stuff.
Sure,
so
yeah.
When I went to go look for that job and I ended up at special events, that was a completely different experience because that was all behind a table. That was my first office job.
Sure.
It was, our center of operations was underneath the, Grand Californian Hotel, which at the time it had only been open for like four years, I want to say. And that's where we were going to, that's where we had all the computers set up. It was me and a team of, I want to say there's maybe 10 of us who were involved with booking all of the accommodations, the travel for invited guests, and also for the media. And this was all for the 50th anniversary. So it was pretty much just all on us. And we spent the first couple of months training on the system and actually calling people and inviting them. And that was, I remember that. I remember that time very fondly because it's very interesting to call up some of these places, like these news organizations in, especially in foreign countries. And they were just so excited and honored that we were calling them and we were going to fly them out here and we were going to put them up in a hotel. And we even gave them food and vouchers and whatnot. They were just so excited that they were chosen to do this. And I remember once, actually, I think he was from Ecuador, I want to say. He was just so excited. He was telling me all this in Spanish because I speak Spanish. But he was telling me all this in Spanish. He's like, oh, my God, I've been a fan of Disneyland my whole life. And this is so, so amazing. And it was basically for news crews, it would be the producer and a camera person and then a personality. So a group of three. So they would just be super excited that they got invited or they got picked to come to cover the 50th anniversary. And then also it was really cool to call some of the invited guests. Like I had a pretty cool conversation with Leonard Maltin. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Leonard Maltin.
Yeah.
And so he was the nicest guy. I mean, he was answering his phone. He didn't have someone else doing
right,
it.
Yeah.
And so I just remember watching him when I was a kid on Entertainment Tonight. And just thinking, you know, because I'm really into movies. So I was just like really excited to be calling Leonard Maltin and inviting him to come over. And he was like, oh, yeah, no, I love Disney. Yeah, I'll be there. And you know, we would send him the invite and whatnot. And then after the invite process, we then had to build all of the invitations. So we had all the pieces and basically we just had to put them together and then assign the correct information and the correct addresses and whatnot. And I think I want to say we did like almost about 1,000 of them. And they consisted of like this really cool package that had a lenticular piece that went in the middle of it and had a booklet and then had all this, I can't remember what else it had in it, but we had to FedEx about 1,000 of them. Mm. We had like a whole stack. We had a pallet that we had to take them out with and give to FedEx so they could send them out. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun too.
Wow. What a fascinating thing to have been a part of.
Yeah. And then what was even cooler was that we sent out all the invitations and then we had to start booking all the flights and And then when it got to the time when we were actually going to have the celebration, which I want to say it was like May 4th, it was 3 days. So when that happened, we had to set up a guest check-in area, and that which we also manned. And that was right out front of the gate. And we had, you know, camera crews, and we had invited guests. The really important invited guests actually came through a separate entrance that was over at the Grand Californian Hotel that was also manned by some of the staff from special events. But I was in the tent that handled all the media. And I just remember we had the option of staying at a hotel because it was this important that we were all there on time, and, you know, nothing was going to prevent us from being there because, you know, we were basically the gateway for all these news crews to come in. I remember they gave us the option to stay at a hotel that was right adjacent to Disneyland. And that was one of the first times that I had ever been comped for anything. and it was exciting, you know, just to stay at a hotel, near Disney property. But yeah, it was, I remember looking back at some of the invited guests. And I remember looking at places back then, you had the ABCs, you had the NBCs, you had the big networks. And then you also had some of the affiliates, like, we invited people from San Diego, that was like NBC San Diego and whatnot. But we also had, which at the time were relegated to the very, very back of the invite list, places like, laughingplace.com or like Blog Mickey. And it was so funny because I remember my boss just not taking them too seriously, but now they're just like super important, you know, blog sites that everyone, you know, goes to. But it's just so funny because at the time I remember meeting some of them and they were also excited. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe you got invited to this. You know,
this is Teresa's dream to get on the media list for Disneyland. we sent it in. We even, when we were at D23 last year, we mentioned it to the ambassadors when we met them and they said, just keep trying. You'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah. It was all about the PR department. I mean, at least back then, there was like six of them. And if you got on their list, you were golden. You were in like Flynn. So
yeah. We'll keep trying.
Yeah.
But yeah, isn't that just amazing how times have changed? Because it seems almost now like the people that are on their media list now seem to be more of the like the vloggers or the bloggers or the podcasters. You know, it's kind of the independent people and not so much like the big, you know, national or local news people.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I think it's been a total reversal.
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely.
Which is really interesting. But I mean, I'm sure that just plays to their strategy. But after we did all those invites, after we did all the check-ins and whatnot, we kind of just sat back for a little bit and just kind of watched everyone form up on the day that the celebration was going to start. And I just remember seeing like a sea of people, kind of like the way that people used to line up for the Star Wars, the new Star Wars ride.
Sure.
Yeah, it was like that though for the 50th anniversary. And it was really cool to see because everyone had those little gold hats that they were giving out.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
The gold mini hats, Mickey Mouse hats. And so that was really fun to watch. And I wish I had taken more pictures back then. I wish I had had a cell phone with a camera back then.
Well, they were just starting to come around and they didn't get good and for like another 10 years probably.
Yeah, yeah.
So since you got to work this special event, were there any cool things or special things that you, I don't know, got to do or received as gifts or something from Disney?
Yeah, I mean, I got to meet Leonard Moulton, so that was cool.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
but I actually got to meet him in person afterwards. Oh!
And so then not just a phone. Cool.
Yeah, not just a phone. So that was the highlight of my day there. But it was also really cool to meet some of the news groups, some of the news teams that were coming over from especially Latin America, because that was my area of expertise there, because I spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
And so it was really fun to talk to them and just see all their gear. And and it was just, I think halfway through, our boss, our manager, wanted us to take a little break. So we went into the park, and this was later at night, I want to say on the second night of the celebration. And I want to say the Goo Goo Dolls were playing on Tom Sawyer's Island. So we got to watch them for a little while.
That's cool.
And it was just a lot of fun just to be there for that moment. Cause you could tell that that was a really special anniversary for Disneyland, the 50th. So it was just a lot of fun to just see everyone excited for it and to see all of the gold attraction vehicles that they had in front of the attractions. And, it was just a lot of fun to just, be there for that moment. I remember that a lot. Actually, at the end of it, I got one of those invitations, and so when I still keep it with me. It's like in mint condition, but I kept that, and then they also gave me a bunch of extra press kits, which had all of these really interesting replicas of the original Disneyland press kits.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And it had all these like photographs, and then it had like the CD that had photographs of like Bono on the teacups. I think that's the one I remember the most. and then they also gave us some of the park maps. They gave us some of the pins. I can't remember what else they gave us, but they gave us a bunch of other stuff, which I just keep in a bin, just, you know, bring it out every now and then just to get nostalgic about it.
I will say I was there. We went to Disneyland for the 50th, and we arrived on the 4th, we arrived on the 3rd. No, we arrived on the 4th. We arrived on the 4th, and we spent the day in California Adventure, which back then was barely a half-day park. Yeah. And I remember that night, they were testing the new fireworks show, and we could see it from our hotel because we stayed at one of the hotels along Harbor there. And I remember being ridiculously excited for this fireworks show because I had heard so much about it. They had released a bunch of stuff on blogs and stuff about how it was going to be an e-ticket in the sky and all this stuff. And I remember just being so freaking excited for that. And I remember the next morning we went, because Disneyland was closed on the 4th. To get ready for the celebration. I'm sure you were aware of that for sure.
Yeah.
And then when we went in and we were on Main Street when they I can't remember who it was. Was it Bob Iger or
they had Julie Andrews there
for
and then they also had Bob Iger for the big I wasn't actually there. I wasn't in on Main Street when they did it. We could hear it going on because we were right outside of the main gate.
Sure.
But then we saw all the fireworks go off and whatnot. But yeah, no, I've seen video since, and it looked like it was a really pretty ceremony.
It's kind of the pinnacle. I feel like in all the times I've been to Disneyland, that trip that we took, and I think we took one later that summer too, or maybe the next year, because it kind of went on for more than a year. I feel like the 50th celebration was just amazing. I can't think of anything that wasn't just amazing about that celebration. The fact that you had to go find 50 golden Mickey ears around the park and all of the, I want to say, was it all the original attractions that were still there from opening day had gold things parts of them were made gold or they had a gold attraction vehicle.
Was the attraction vehicle. Yeah.
It was just such a cool idea. And the interactivity of it, of like trying to find all the different Mickey ears and the fact that things were in gold. And I don't know, it was just really I thought it was really classy. I really liked the look of it. They, you know, we spoke about this a few weeks ago that, Matt, we met was the president then, and he whipped the crap out of that park because it was kind of deteriorating there for a while. And I just couldn't believe how quickly he whipped everything into shape and got everything. Like, I think every single surface in the park got repainted. I mean, it was pretty, pretty amazing. And so when we went, I thought that when we were going to go for the 60th, that it would be something as spectacular. But I didn't feel like it was quite the same level. I'm hoping that maybe like the 75th will be totally cool and amazing. So. And I hope I'm around. I know I'll be very old, but I'm hope I'm around for the 100th because I would love to be there on Disneyland's 100th birthday. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, I thought about that too because of all the stuff that I kept. All the merchandise that I kept, all the merch that I got from the invitations and whatnot. And I thought about the 100th anniversary and bringing that out, and just if eBay's still a thing, just putting it out there and just being like, look, this was from 50 years ago.
You know? Right?
Yeah.
Will, sure, for the record, I will be 74.
Wow.
So I'll make it to 74 and go to Disneyland.
Yeah. Oh, you've got something to live for now.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Tag, how come in this time of COVID you're not leaving the house? I want to make it to Disneyland's 100th. But anyway, sorry, that just brought back a lot of like really good memories of that time in the park, as you know, things were just coming around. We were just a couple years away from them redoing a bunch of stuff with California Adventure that became really cool. So I was going to ask you this earlier, and I want to make sure I ask you this because I will forget, that when you were doing stocking, mm-hmm. what was it? So how do I want, there's like two questions I want to ask here. One of them is, I know on Main Street that they light up Main Street and cars come out and everything's on Main Street and it's a little less magical. Is it like that in other areas of the park? Do they have like big spotlights that come out, or does everything kind of stay, you know, dark? And then what, just in general, I mean, you kind of talked about this a little bit earlier, but in general, like what does it feel like to be in the park when nobody else is there? That's a guest. So you can just kind of, it's my dream, you know, to be in the park when it's like this. And so just be able to like walk around this magical place and just have like peace.
So I think that there's two very different experiences in terms of being by yourself there. When we were doing stock, there's a different experience between doing stock at the end of the night when everything's closed on Main Street than there is in the rest of the park. Because usually by around 12:30, everyone's really well pushed out of the park onto Main Street. So you can start, you know, closing all the tarps and you can start stocking, and it's kind of like, you know, you don't have anything to worry about. But on Main Street, they would start stocking. I mean, they're constantly stocking all day, but on Main Street, it was like this mad rush of people who were constantly going upstairs and downstairs and upstairs and downstairs to the stock room and just, you know, restocking and having everything ready for the moment that those doors closed. And I remember we used to do this thing where I don't know, I think it was a lead would like start dimming the lights a little bit mm-hmm. at the end of the night. So it would start getting to about like one in the morning, and they would start dimming the lights a little bit so that it would encourage people to leave.
Sure.
That was a completely different experience because it was way more hectic on Main Street than it was anywhere else in the park. But sure. being by yourself, walking through, like, let's say for instance from Critter Country all the way over to Costuming, which is basically behind Tomorrowland, that is a weird experience. Because it's not a weird experience, it's a great experience, because you're kind of either you're walking with someone else, you're walking with like the people who also were working there with you, or you're just walking there by yourself and you see a lot of the maintenance people doing their thing. You see some of the horror culture people start doing their thing. Or sometimes it would just be, you know, you'd get at that right moment when no one's out. And so you're just kind of walking by yourself with all this really loud music, like just blaring in the background. So it was an interesting experience just being in the park by yourself with no one else around that you could see. Yeah.
You know, the other thing I was thinking about too is like wildlife. Do you get to see... what, you know, some of the like the ducks or
the cats of Disneyland,
the cats, or you know, just other things that live in the park but usually are not running around and out so you can see them, because right there's a bunch of people, so usually they tend to, well, unless they've been learned that hey, people equals food, they tend to hide, you know. So I, you know, some of those things, I just was kind of thinking about that, if there's like different, well, if there's a different feel of the park because of like the wildlife that would live there.
I don't think I saw too much wildlife there other than the ducks. And then occasionally some of the birds,
Disneyland ducks.
Every now and then we'd see a cat. We, you know, we'd make that same joke that everybody makes. It's like, oh, better tell Mickey, you know, like, to watch out. But every, I mean, they kept that pretty much, under control of the cats. I think, I don't know for sure, but maybe they had some sort of feeders or something backstage or something. But every now and then you would see a cat, but it was mostly the ducks sure. that I would see the most. And sometimes they would even make it all the way over to Main Street. They're just walking around, you know, because there's less people. So they just feel like, hey, everyone's gone. Let's just go down Main Street. So that was always fun too. Yeah, I remember sometimes too, at the end of the night, after we had all stocked, and this was right in, I want to say 2000, 1999, one of our leads used to take us on ride walkthroughs.
That sounds amazing.
I don't even know what it is.
That sounds amazing.
So this was pre 9/11. You used to be able to, and I don't know if this is a common thing that everyone did, but I know my lead would take us at the end of the night after we finished stocking everything, and he'd say, hey, we should go and walk on Indiana Jones, or hey, we should go walk on Pirates, or, you know, Haunted Mansion. And it was the coolest thing that I think I ever did at Disneyland, was just going there and just walking on the rides while everything's turned off.
That's crazy.
And usually it would be okay because, my lead, he knew he was really into like trains and, he was really into all of the people that work the rides, the engineers and whatnot.
Sure.
So he would know a lot of them. So they would just see him and they'd be like, hey, Scotty, how you doing? Yeah, come on through. And we would just pick up, it was like this little indicator. It was basically like a key. Or sometimes it was just like this this baton looking thing that you would take off from whatever entrance we were going through. And that was just to indicate to whoever was working on the ride that there was someone on the track. So we would go like on Indy, for instance, we had to take one of those, and it was like a group of like four or five of us, and we would just walk through the attraction.
Oh,
and it was so cool. Wow. I think my favorite attraction that we ever did on that was the Haunted Mansion.
Good choice.
Because I'm sure you'd get in so much trouble for doing that now, we would go all the way down to the big dining scene.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we would look. I one of my leads actually has a couple of pictures when, you know, we were there. She took a disposable camera with her, and you know, we took a couple of pictures there, and also walking through Splash Mountain. That was also fun.
Oh, you're making us jealous here, Jesse.
No, it was because I'm actually thinking about it. Like, we did a lot of those rides, because we did all of the dark rides. So those were really, really easy to just walk through.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But Pirates is one of the more harder ones to walk through because of all the water. But you don't really see it. But spoiler for anyone, you know, I don't want to ruin the magic. But as you're going, there's like this divider from the wall to where the water is, the retainer tank is with the water. There's like this space in between there. So you can walk right on through, and you're basically walking parallel to the boat. So we would walk through there, and, you know, we'd see all the attractions that were all turned off, and you could see all the boats and whatnot. But that was fun. I think that was probably the hardest one though, because you had to keep going from side to side because of all the water. But yeah, no, that was a lot of fun. Indy was a lot of fun to go through. All the dark rides were fun to go through. What was another one we went through? And then all the dark rides. Yeah, we did those too. But I mean, okay, this is all pre 9/11, so once 9/11 came around, like we were.
Nobody's allowed anywhere unless you had to be there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so I have to know. So walking through these attractions, do they turn the animatronics off, or are they still doing their things? Depending on which attraction you're in, or maybe do some attractions the animatronics are on, and other ones they are turned completely off.
From what I remember, on Pirates and on Haunted Mansion, and those were all turned off. But they were off. But they used to keep the fire effect in Pirates of the Caribbean still on. But it was weird, because I'm sure you guys know how that works. It's just like a sheet that has like light projected on it. That's all you would see, is like a moving sheet. So we would just be like, that's so weird. There's just like a sheet blowing with like air through it, you know? But yeah, I think they turned everything off Yeah.
Gotcha.
But it was
I'd always
really
heard
creepy,
like rumors that they never turned them off. And so if you'd be down there, like the pirates would still be doing their little creaky movements. However.
Yeah. I mean, we were there when the maintenance crews were there. So I'm thinking maybe they were, you know, I think they're turned off all the time, but maybe they weren't. But I mean, when we were there, they were turned off. But
right.
Yeah, it was still kind of eerie at times, though.
I think it'd be creepier with some of those things not moving.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, for instance, in the Haunted Mansion, we had to go in through the exit, right? So that's because you have to avoid you can't go through the elevator. So, you know, you start walking the path of where the doom buggies are. And I remember I used to work with an older cast member. He was a really great guy. I can't remember his name now, but I was 18, 19 at the time. So I was very gullible. I was very naive. And so I remember.
Some of us still are. Don't judge.
Yeah. I remember going through the seance room with him. And we got to the part where there's that watch face and the grandfather clock.
Oh, yeah.
So we got right to that area. And then he like puts his hand on my chest and he's like, Jesse, don't walk any further. And I was like, what? What's happening? He's like, I swear to you, I just sensed the ghost. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? And, you know, he's like an older man. So I respect my elders and what they're saying. So I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? He's like, yeah, I feel it. Like, didn't you feel it? And I'm like, no. And then I look over at my friend Scotty and he's like, he's just BSing with you, man. You know, just, yeah, he's not. He's just messing with
you. That would 100% be me. I'd be like, what?
Yeah. No, because it's already really eerie with all the lights in there, with all the lights turned on. And so you're just kind of like, is he for serious? Because I'm scared over here. I'm already scared that we're in this attraction with all the lights on. And now you're telling me that there's a ghost? Are you kidding? Come on.
I thought they were fake.
Yeah, exactly.
Teresa would never leave the spot. She'd be terrified.
Yeah.
She'd probably be crying.
Yeah. Well, it didn't help that it was in that seance room. So.
Yeah, the seance room. Yeah.
Teresa would be like, I could never go on this again.
I still think about it, actually, when I ride through that ride.
I was like, when you walk through it, huh?
Yeah, no. I still think about it when I ride through it, and I just think, you know, I can't remember his name, but he was a really great guy. But I just remember that time. Just, you know, it's fun to think about when you're that young, you know.
Teresa's losing it over here.
I am.
Jesse, I feel like we could talk with you forever. This is what happens with cast members, right? There's always so many stories and things
amazing
we could talk
stories.
About. Yeah, amazing. But I feel like we should start to wrap it up here.
Yeah, before we ask you our final question, though, for the night, I think this is so fun because it's really cool because, right, like we talked about in the beginning, cast members are what make the parks magical for guests. Can you think, was there any time that you as a cast member maybe had a guest create some magic for you, or were there some things that you were able to do as a cast member to create extra magic for some special guests?
You know, I it's so funny. Like, there were so many moments being a cast member that I have like little snippets of a memory because after a while, you even the more magical moments kind of just start piling up. And so you kind of start to forget them, you know, a little bit. I guess what I remember the most is some of the celebrities that I got to ring up while I was working there. For me, I don't know if it's the most magical moment, but it's the most memorable moment for me. Mm-hmm. Working the photo booth part of Splash Mountain.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so there's like a little photo booth. There's that little photo booth area of the store where as soon as you come out of Splash Mountain, you go get your photograph.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also another like little area where one cast member, I mean, I don't know how it is now, but one cast member used to sit in this one space for I think an hour or so, and we would rotate, and we would just go, we would have this computer there, and we would just look at every image and approve or disapprove of the image.
Oh, so that they would show up. Some interesting things.
Yeah. And so one time I remember my lead came in and he said, hey, Jesse, Kobe Bryant's on the ride right now. You got to watch out for his picture. Make sure that it doesn't go out. And so I was like, wait, what are you talking about? And sure enough, Kobe Bryant is like, he's on the slide. And, And I just remember like at first approving it and then going like, oh my God, no, I have to approve that. What am I doing? and then just, you know, kind of walking out real quick and just seeing him and his family just walk by. And that was really cool to see.
Oh, so
that was, I think that was one of my most memorable moments that I can remember.
Why not approve it, I guess?
I'm sure because they didn't want it to go on the public viewing thing, and then all of the guests that would have just gotten off the attraction would be like, wait a minute, Kobe, and like run after
so,
him or something.
Sure. Yeah, so at the time, actually, this is a little, I don't know, it's a little weird, but at the time, he had just had all those troubles. He was there with his wife. And so the big thing at the time was that everyone was trying to get a picture of his wife with her new ring because it was like this really big ring.
Sure.
So that was the thing that, you know, they didn't want any pictures of him out there or anything like that. And he was actually escorted pretty much all backstage because I remember seeing him backstage too when I was eating. I think that was the whole thing. I think that's why they didn't want us to have that picture out there. So
sure.
But he was fun. Tom Hanks was fun. Whoopi Goldberg was fun. I actually got to interact with like a Spanish soap opera star from when I was a kid.
And I actually
got to ring her up, and it was like the most magical moment for me because I was like, oh my God, I watched your soap opera when I was a kid. This is amazing. But I think that was probably the most memorable moments for me. And then also just interacting with a lot of like foreign guests. I think that was my favorite thing too, because it was always this fun sort of like back and forth with them trying to understand what they're saying. And usually we ended up doing like this sort of pantomime thing with a lot of guests because, you know, especially from Japan, guests from Japan or guests from other countries. And I think that was like also a lot of fun just to try to communicate with people. That was really interesting for me. Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping that you're not doing what a lot of, at least American people do, which is, don't you understand?
No.
Yeah. Yelling is not just because it's not that you're not saying it loud enough
or slow enough.
They just don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah. I used to be a Disney trainer. So that was one of the things that, you know, we also made sure that other cast members knew that, you know, you have to be patient with people. And if you can't understand them, then we would usually try calling City Hall, and they'd have usually a translator that could help. And then we also did the two finger point all the time, you know, because in some countries it's offensive. So no, we made sure that we were as patient as possible with them you know, you never want to offend anyone. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely.
Well, I mean, you know, I just want to bring up and reiterate a point. So a few episodes ago, we had on Robin, who was the ambassador for Disneyland in 1997. And she talked about how important it is, at least with the ambassadors, that people were able to be multilingual. And so it sounds like, you know, you were one of those multilingual cast members, too, that is very important to have in the parks, especially being in Southern California. You know, from when you were there to now, I mean, there's a huge Spanish population. So being able to be bilingual with that is very important.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add one more thing. And I know we're already going on.
No, that's
okay.
No, you're good.
As I was thinking about all these questions that you guys sent over, I was thinking about just one of the experiences that an overall experience that I had when I was working at Disneyland. It was how Disneyland, especially since I was 18 at the time when I got the job, was basically like this extension of high school for me. And it was a surreal high school because it was, like there were still all the cool kids who worked in the attractions. Mm-hmm. There were still all the, you know, the people who worked in stores, the people who worked in foods. And there were all these cliques, and there were all these like groups that would hang out. And I just remember thinking of it as like this extension of high school. Like I felt like I was still in high school those first couple of years because of that sort of dynamic that existed there. And I just, one of my favorite things that reminded me of how similar it was to high school was that after we would finish up a shift, everyone would go to a Denny's. after work. And in Disneyland, I don't know if anyone, if you've ever noticed it, but there's like five Denny's within a mile radius of Disneyland.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I've ever noticed that. I've noticed like one maybe, but not five.
Well, there's one like across the street, but I think there's a bunch
I've noticed.
Yeah, there's one across the street, but the more popular one, and had just been built at the time, was the one next to the Anaheim Stadium. Okay. And so everyone would like all the stores people, all the attractions people, they would all go to that one. That was like the more popular one to go to. But it was just fun because everyone would go like in shifts. So obviously attractions people were off first. So they'd be at Denny's first. And then, you know, some of the foods people would get there afterwards. And then we would get there, some of the stores people. But it kind of reminded me of like a 50s diner. Kind of where, you know, you'd walk in with your crew and you know, you'd see the attractions people over there just hanging out, and you'd see all the custodial people over there on, you know, in those booths over there. And it was just funny, you know, just thinking about how I had the stamina to stay up until 5-6 in the morning at Denny's, just talking to my friends and just eating and just having that kind of like fun experience that I don't think I could do that now. You know,
no.
There's no way I could stay up till 5 in the morning now, but I just remember just that was fond memories of doing that. And it was pretty much every single night too. So it wasn't it was like a thing, you know, like, hey, we should all go to Denny's afterwards. Hey, let's go.
See,
you know?
I think that that's a thing for anybody who works in any type of job that you are off work later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because when I was younger, I worked at a movie theater, and we would get off, you know, when the last movie got out and everybody would leave, we'd shut everything down and leave. So that would sometimes be, you know, 1-2 in the morning. And so whoever would stay that late, or people that worked maybe not that late, but we'd come back and meet up and we'd go, we didn't have a Denny's. We had it was a place very much like Denny's called Caro's. And we would go there and we would do, like you said, you know, you'd be there for 3 or 4 hours and just, you know, hang out with everybody and just kind of, you know, have that downtime. Cause when you get off work that late, you just got to kind of wind down. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it was a lot of fun too, because there was a lot of dating that was happening at the time.
Oh,
you know?
Sure.
So that was kind of like the thing to do. It's like, hey, you know, you meet, you know, a girl or a guy that you liked, and, you know, or like if you ever, there was someone that you were into, instead of asking them out on a date to go somewhere, like to a movie, you'd be like, hey, you want to go to Denny's after work? You know, like, it was that sort of an icebreaker sort of a
thing. Denny's, so romantic.
I remember I did that with my wife.
It worked.
Yeah, that was like our first date. We went to a Denny's. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, I tell you, fun. Man, you're bringing back lots of memories not from Disneyland, but similar kind of feelings there. It's you know, between the 50th that you mentioned earlier and now talking about Denny's and stuff, it just reminds me of all the, I tell you, it's you build a bond with people that kind of have that, because you're working kind of outside of the norm, right? Because most people are like, oh, Monday through Friday 9 to 5 and all that kind of thing. So when you get people that work later or work earlier, it's kind of this weird out of time thing that people that don't do it don't understand, I don't think.
That was the thing that I think I missed the most too, after I stopped working at Disney proper in 2006. Because after that, I started working at the Heraldry Shop, which was also inside Fantasyland. Mm-hmm. But I think I missed that part of the camaraderie with like all the other cast members that were part of, you know, Disney proper. Because as a leasing, you're kind of by yourself. But yeah, I think I missed that the most, you know, that camaraderie and that sort of, you know, on a whim, just go to Disneyland at like 1 o'clock at night. So.
All right. Well, we have enjoyed so much talking with you today, Jesse. So thank you so much for all of the amazing stories. I learned a ton of new stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you, Tag.
You know, honestly, in the beginning, I was like, oh, we're going to talk about merchandise. Like, how interesting could this be? But you have like a wealth of really interesting things I never even thought of. The fact that we went down that whole thing about the embroidery on the hats, like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I know it seems silly, and like you did it for, you know, a while, and it probably isn't a big deal to you, but I tell you, I'll bet you people that listen are going to love this.
If you were to go back to work at the parks, what would your dream position be? Now, remember, sky is the limit. You can make up a position for this if you'd like, or was there some position that you, like, when you were there, just thought would be the perfect spot for you?
I think if I were to go back to Disneyland now, ideally I would want to try to find a job as a graphic designer. Some of the graphic design that when I was there, I tried applying actually a couple of times, but sure. I just didn't have that experience at the time. Some of the projects they would work on, I mean, they were designing all the signs. They were designing, you know, a lot of stuff that went backstage, front of stage. So I think that's the job that I would really want to do, is one of their in-house graphic designers. I think I know I'll end up back at Disneyland at some point. You know, hopefully, you know, when I'm older, I think I'll end up, you know, retiring there, because I know a lot of like older cast members who were super wise to me and who were really, you know, influential at the time when I was working there, imparted a lot of their wisdom to me. And I always thought about it, you know, I want to come back here and do the same thing when I'm older and when I'm retired, and, you know, I can share some of these stories, you know, back in my day, we used to write on hats, that sort of thing, you know, so, but yeah.
Back in my day, we used to walk around the attractions after hours.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's your thing. You can be the person to scare the bejesus out of someone.
Yeah, there you go.
In the Haunted Mansion.
I'd love to do that. Yeah. So I know I'll end up there back, you know, someday, but I think my ideal job would be a graphic designer there.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for being on the show and getting in contact with us to kind of put yourself out there to be on the show. Like I said, we've covered stuff that I didn't even like know we were going to talk about when we started this. So, and also I think, you know, we may contact you again in the future to be on to talk about the Long Beach stuff if we do something about that.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. Yeah. No, I had a lot of fun talking to both of you. I listen to you guys every week, and I listen to the interviews that you have with some of the cast members. And every time I listen to them, it just gets me nostalgic for when I worked there. Mm. And I thought, you know, I need to contact them. I need to talk to somebody about my time there, because I think my wife's tired of it. So
you contact us anytime. We're more than happy to chat.
Yeah. I'd love to come back and talk to you guys some more. You guys are great to talk to. Thank you so much.
Well, so were you. So you were,
yeah.
Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer Vern to get the answers to this week's trivia from Chris K, Olivia C, Chris Y, Donna S, Todd B, and Jamie B, who all provided amazing, excellent questions.
Great questions.
And now we finally get to have the answers that we've all been waiting for, because we probably didn't give the answers.
And listeners, you pulled through for us and you sent us some really good ones. Take Teresa, you did well. You got some right.
Okay.
You did okay, but the listeners, you pulled through, you sent us some really good ones, and we appreciate you helping us out. So let's get into it. The first question from Christopher K. and Olivia C. Where is the time capsule in Disneyland and when will it be opened? You are right, it is at Sleeping Beauty Castle. And the opening day will be July 17th of 2035. It was buried in 1995.
So what is that?
So what's 30?
80. That's 80th.
80 years.
So we're 5 years off.
Dang, good job, Liberty.
Liberty in our chat got it, though.
Mm-hmm.
The second question from listener Chris Y. Who signed the permit to operate the elevator in the Tower of Terror? That was Mr. Cadwallader. A reference to a name the devil uses in a Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, that's good.
The date on that signature is October 31st, 1939.
Perfect.
Ooh.
Question 3 from listener Donna S. What was the first music loop at Disneyland that is still being played there today? That was the Walt Disney Company song When You Wish Upon a Star at the entrance to Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Oh. It was in our discussion topic.
Yeah, but
Jesse mentioned hearing it.
Didn't even think it would have been there forever.
Jeez.
The more you know.
I'm going to give that one to Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
Question number 4 from listener Todd B. Wally Pogue may be best known for his iconic and record-breaking run as Pex Bill in the Golden Horseshoe Review, but he also provided the voice for another iconic character in a Disneyland attraction. Who is this character? Jose in the Enchanted Tiki Room.
Oh!
Wow.
That's a good one.
That's a super stumper.
Todd B., thank you for sending that one in.
And your bonus question, which I thought for sure you were going to get this one perfectly, and then you had it, and you almost talked yourself out of it, and then one of you had it. Jamie B. sent in, what was the first attraction with the Omnimover system? That was Adventures Through Inner Space.
Teresa!
Yay! I know my not Haunted Mansion history.
And so you know Haunted Mansion so well that I thought for sure that you would know that it wasn't the first to have it, and you immediately had the right answer, and then you're talking yourself out of it, and I'm over here biting my cheeks to not react.
I know when the Haunted Mansion opened. I don't know when Adventure Through Inner Space opened.
Jeez. So
it was a total like, ooh, it would have been around the same time, but was it before or after?
You got 2 out of 5. Ooh. I got 1 out of 5.
The first one was a group effort.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got what it takes to send in some really good stumpers for them? If you would like to send some in yourself, feel free to do so at trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.